This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How is it going over there in Jackson, Mississippi, this only mere days away from, or from, not away from, what am I saying? It already happened. It's in the past. The 45th anniversary is coming on. The road to 50 is in front of us, my friend. How are you feeling?
It is indeed. It is indeed. Man, great event. And we are doing really well. It's just been all over the map as far as insanity, busyness of it all. But things are really good. So just so happy to be around friends and lots of family and everything over the past week or so. And they were just having a really, really good time and getting geared up for the fall, man. It's going to be going to be a lot of fun.
Well, that's awesome, man. You know, I just got back from New York myself. I didn't mention this last week because I didn't want to give away the surprise. But my brother, my youngest brother, just turned 30. My other brother decided that, like, he came up with this idea for us to surprise him with a surprise birthday party, which is great because he hates surprises and he hates birthday parties, like specifically his birthday. But despite hating all that, he loves us. He loves his siblings. He loves me, my brother, and my sister. And so, you know, given that he is actually out in New York City and we are, you know, wherever else we are in D.C. and Texas and Jackson and all over, we thought, you know what, it'd be this massive surprise. We'll spring on him, and maybe this time he'll love his birthday because we'll all be there and he would not expect it. So,
man, that's hilarious. You at least, you know, try to be forgiving enough to make you happy on his birthday instead of himself. Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, so that was this last past weekend. Always a blast. I love New York, man. I absolutely love New York. It was interesting, the planning of this particular trip, because, you know, with it being kind of going up for the sake of, you know, for a party, normally when I go to New York, I stay with my brother, right? Like, you know, that's free lodging. Well,
right.
I can't tell him I'm coming because I'm going to surprise him, but I also don't want to spring for a hotel. So yeah, I kind of went in blindly, like, you know, surely I could stay at his place, but more on how that turned out next week.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, good. We're all waiting with anticipation in New York. Yeah, I'm sure that worked out with no flaws at all.
Man, speaking of waiting with anticipation, once again, the Texas Pipe Show is back up and coming this coming October. And, you know, I know that a lot of folks here in the Texas and surrounding areas are looking forward to it. 2 years ago, we both went. Last year, you went. This year, man, try as we might, we just could not make it work out for us to go this year. But I know it's going to be a blast. And if you happen to be in the Texas or surrounding areas, make your plans. Be there October 10th through the 12th at Pop Safari Room. You want to talk about one of the coolest pipe shops. And I mean, like, such an amazing experience. And it's interesting because I've talked to various people in here in the Houston Pipe Club and just kind of the pipe community as a whole. And, you know, Pop Safari Room holds kind of this this unique space in the
it's an interesting shop. It really is.
It really is. Everybody has an opinion on it, which I found really, really interesting, especially like being here in Houston and talking to some other folks who, you know, have obviously gone to the Texas Pipe Show before or just been up there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and experienced it. But man, like, you want to talk about a historied enthusiast and its owner and just a really unique experience. We really highly recommend you check it out. So again, that's Pop Safari Room, October 10th through the 12th is the Texas Pipe Show. Go have fun, and we know you will. So
Hey, Bo, quick additional announcement. Actually, the North American Society of Pipe Collectors, the NASPC, is having their big annual show. Of course, everyone looks forward to in Dublin, Ohio. That is August 23rd and 24th this month, here a few days away. And so Crown Plaza Hotel at 600 Metro Place North in Dublin, Ohio. And so August 23rd, 5 to 10 p.m., and August 24th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. So great show. It's one of those things that everyone always looks forward to in the pipe community. And lots of vendors, different smoke shops, pipe makers, artisans of all kinds, accessories, all kinds of different stuff. So go meet a lot of royalty of the pipe community here in the United States. We'll always show up at the NASPC. We won't be there, but we hope someone who is there will see you there.
Yeah, you know, I know this is an interesting year, as I feel like that's been the excuse for the last couple of years, to be honest. podcast.
I know, right? Yeah, look at all these interesting things we have going on.
I know. When has it not been an interesting year? That's actually a really good point. But at some point, we would love to figure out a method for us to travel more. Like, aside from the fact that it gives us the excuse to see each other, going to some of these pipe shows around the country, these are the spots that people come together, that you get a chance to meet other people in the community, that you get a chance to see the artwork and the skill and the craft on full display. There's really nothing like it. So if you've never been to a pipe show, if there's one in your area, don't ever hesitate. Make it happen. All right, man, we've got a great show. Of course, we are diving into a series that is about the truest series you could expect from a show like Country Squire Radio, a pipe tobacco podcast. You'd think that they would talk about pipe tobacco, right? Well, guess what? Today we are.
Today is the day.
That's right, man. So I always love this too, because we generally pair up Tobacco Talks and Squire Selects back to back. And I think to some extent there's a reason for that, and that, you know, as you have joked in the past, Squire Select almost feels self-indulgent. Like, us giving ourselves the excuse to jump on microphone, drink whiskey, and talk about something that we love. And fortunately, the gracious audience that's out there has allowed us to do this every 10 episodes or so, you know, kind of take one for us. But we almost feel like we do need to kind of like give back to that, right? Like, if we're going to be doing the kind of the Squire Select and enjoying the whiskey one week, well, we need to get back to the truest form of what a pipe tobacco podcast should be. And thus,
that's right.
The Tobacco Talk series exists. And this is where we
come back home.
Exactly. Various pipe tobaccos. In the past, we've done kind of, you know, looser blends or blends from the Country Squire along with the 10. Sometimes we do two Country Squire blends. Sometimes we do two 10s. And today we're kind of doubling down on the two 10s. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right, man. I think we got a couple of good winners for us today. One is a newer tobacco. One's been on the market for a while. And both are tins that need to be at least be aware of in the pipe world. I think you'll enjoy both, or at least find both interesting and very high quality. So, man, yeah, today, Bo, we're going to start out with a product from our friends at Sutliff that they debuted. I guess this was late last year they came out with this tobacco. But, man, it's got a lot of great reviews. We've been really pleased with the quality of it, the consistency of it. Man, today we were talking about the Red Virginia Crumble Cake from Sutliff. You know, when we talk about crumble cake, this is the pipe community, and so we have to spell cake a little differently. So it's K-A-K-E, right? Because we're going to do that. Red Virginia, it's one of those that is just a really good tobacco, you know, but I think also it would be, you know, if you're someone that likes to experiment at home, you could even take this and blend it with different things to kind of create some of your own blend. So straight Virginia tobacco from Sutliff. This is a mature Virginia that's put into cakes to age. These big cakes, you know, allow just a mellowing, a sweetening, a, you know, marrying up of these tobaccos, extra fermentation, and then they're sliced and then, you know, put into the tin and kind of these crumbly slices. And the tobacco only comes in a 1.5 ounce tin. And so it's a, you know, just a very, you know, you can only get it that one way. It's not the cheapest tobacco, but it's incredibly high quality and yeah, really good.
I feel like this has been in like the headlines for a bit lately.
Like this
has kind of been a play. I mean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost seems like this has been a play on Sutliff of kind of stepping into a space where a need was.
Yep. I think you're going in the direction that that I think we're all knew you're heading in. Yeah, that's exactly right. So when you look at this tobacco, matter of fact, Bo, you want to describe the tin art here? We'll open it up and then talk about the smell and the taste and all that.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, of course, you've got the traditional Sutliff, I guess, coat of arms logo.
Yep, the Sutliff chicken. Yeah,
like right there. But in terms of the actual, you know, the art itself, it's pretty basic. And I don't necessarily mean that in a negative way. I mean, we've seen this a lot, especially in more classic branding in terms of like, you know, the baseline, just here's a color. In this case, it's black with kind of a goldish text and the Red Virginia popping out, of course, in red with red lining around the, you know, the circumference of the tin itself. It's very basic in that classic sense, despite being kind of a newer blend.
Yeah, it is. You know, this is not a tin that's probably going to stand out on the shelf, right? It's not one of those that you'll look at and you'll be like, oh, man, I've got to buy that. This is something that you'll probably go looking for, or your tobacconist will have to recommend to you for it to really, really pop. But, you know, for the smoker that kind of knows what they're looking for, that Red Virginia premium pipe tobacco, that's what's going to stand out. That's really what's going to stand out. We're talking a coin style tin here. It's not like the Sutliff private stock blends that are in the, kind of a biscuit can container that we we've talked about before, but it is in the vacuum sealed coin style tin, just very simple product. But again, don't let that steer you clear of this particular tobacco. So when I open the tin here, you're met with this this white paper that we always see. We call it the tobacco Elizabethan collar, right? Mm-hmm. that always. Is inside these things. And so delicately open that, and there's a little black paper wafer that, of course, is protecting the tobacco and kind of keeping it all in there neatly tucked away. And then underneath that is a very a nice little pile of very beautiful, very, very aromatic. And when I say aromatic, I don't mean flavored. I mean just it smells strong. Tobacco chunks. We're talking about a cake of tobacco that has been sliced, and they're in these chunky, crumbly strips here. And so think of a flake tobacco. If you haven't smoked a lot of these kind of tobaccos before, think of a flake tobacco, but something much thicker and chunky and that breaks apart very easily. This is kind of along those lines. So as soon as you open the tin of the Sutliff Crumble Cake Red Virginia, the sting on your nose of vinegar comes from across the room. It really does. It's pretty amazing. And that sting, of course, a trademark of many of those Virginia blends, those matured Virginias that have been aged for quite a while, and a lot of care has gone into to taking them. And so, of course, when we think of vinegary, ketchup-y Virginias, we do think of those old McClellan tobaccos. And so I do in some sense think that, Sutliff saw a void that was there, and we're like, man, we're gonna go after some of that and see, if we can kind of mimic, some things that they were producing. And I think has done a good job. This is not a clone of a Sutliff tobacco to my mind, but it is kind of in that vein and that, direction. It comes from that maybe school of thought, and is obviously processed with some of the same or similar processes that Sutliff has tried to recreate. So these particular chunks of tobacco, they're these kind of bacony, cake pieces here. They're very moist. It's best, I find, when you are ready to smoke it, tear it apart. It crumbles very, very easily in your hand. Make a little pile of it, maybe on a piece of paper or on the lid of the tin, however much you think you'll smoke, and let it sit there and just kind of breathe for a few minutes before you load your pipe with it. I think that'll help.
Well, yeah. Let me ask you this. Is that specifically because it's a cake, or is that like unique to this specific cake?
Well, I think it is unique to this specific cake. They are other cakes, you can tear apart and smoke pretty easily. Although I will say, on average, most crumble cakes are going to be on the moisture side. Now, plugs, that's different. A lot of times you'll see plugs that, where whole leaf tobacco has been pressed and cut into this perfect little brownie. And a lot of times those are good to go as soon as you slice some off the plug itself. But, with these crumble cakes, a lot of times you do have more moisture. That's kind of part of the reason you use a crumble cake, is that it takes advantage of that moisture and lets those flavors marry up really well, real quickly. But with this particular one, it is, I think, particularly moist. And so you'll want to let it sit back a little bit. It loads very gently in your pipe. And so once you do let it dry out, you'll load it, just kind of very, very gently crumble it apart. My experience is if you crumble it apart very finely and then load your pipe up with it and then give it a really nice push there at the end, you don't really want to tamp it down super hard throughout the pack. Just kind of load your pipe up with it, nice heaping over the top of the bowl. Pack or load and then just pack it pretty firmly right there at the end. And so one thing about this, even with the drying of the tobacco, this is a harder tobacco, I think, to keep lit. And so once you light it and get this tobacco going, you're probably going to have to baby this tobacco pretty regularly. I think that is some from the cut. It's some from the moisture content. Just a variety of things. But every pipe I've smoked this in, I've had a little trouble keeping it lit. But having said that, it's very much worth it, worth the tinkering. And as you get through the bowl, you know, as you are smoking the tobacco kind of through the bowl, some of that moisture will start to bake off. You know, you'll be left with the tobacco that is easier throughout the smoke to stay lit. So one thing when you do have trouble keeping a tobacco lit, you'll be tempted to really puff it hard and constantly to, you know, to keep it lit, and you'll kind of, I call it hot boxing your pipe, you know, where you're just sitting there freight training it, right? You know, I would try to avoid that. If your pipe dies, let it die. Just apply a very little bit of flame to your pipe. If you're using a lighter, just a little kiss of flame on the top there will reignite it and bring it right back. And once you kind of fight through that first little bit of this particular tobacco's desire to want to go out, it'll start to stabilize, I think, and will stay lit a little easier. So, man, such a tangy, tangy, delicious, rich flavor. It is vinegary. It's not particularly complex, but it does have just an incredible tanginess to it. This is not a tobacco that your English blend purist is going to like. You know, most aromatic smokers are not going to like this. But it's a sweet, matured Virginia that's got just that real nice, twang to it. You know, that sweetness that only comes from just a little bit of that sour, vinegary flavor that sits on your tongue. And so for those of us that do miss, some of the tobaccos from, yesteryear, I think you'll really enjoy this old fashioned crumble cake. It's one that it's just a really high quality tobacco. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, yeah, no. So what would you say? I mean, like, so this is kind of, whenever we do a tobacco talk, it's really, you know, about kind of your thoughts and
yeah,
feelings, but, you know, because of the freshness of this product on the industry, how would you classify the reception broadly beyond just your own personal take on it? Like,
yeah,
is this doing the job it's clearly set out to do, I guess, is kind of the question.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great question, Bo. I think it is. For the most part, folks have been Virginia smokers anyway, because this is not a tobacco for, folks that just occasionally dabble in Virginias. At least I don't think. I think this is for the Virginia lover. But I think reviews so far have been pretty positive about this tobacco. When Sutliff came out with this, I do think it was their goal to mimic some of those tangy McClelland Virginia blends. And, it's not a facsimile or clone of any of those blends. I mean, it at least not particularly in my mind. It's one of those that's just kind of processed in that vein, in that direction. I think it's a really tasty tobacco. And for the most part, the market has acknowledged that, I think. You know, is it identical to, the way a McClelland blend would have looked, would have tasted, would have smelled? No, I think this tobacco is not quite as nuanced as what we saw mostly from McClelland. Certainly the look of the tobacco is different. It comes in a different style tin. The tobacco, is packaged, the form of the tobacco and the crumble cake, that's never something you, saw from McClelland, although Mike would make cakes out of tobacco. He would then gently tear those apart to be tinned, down the road. But I think there are, people realize what this is. They realize that it's good. It's not a exact duplication of something seen in the past. It's something that's new and fun, but it is processed, I think, in that vein, and I think people do appreciate it for that.
All right, right on. Well, good stuff. So it's got the John David stamp of approval.
It does have the John David stamp of approval. Yeah. It does. Yeah. The good housekeeping, the Oprah O on the front of the crummy book that you see at Target. I like this tobacco a lot. It's not a particularly nuanced tobacco. It's not super complex or anything. But if you're craving just that nice, matured, tangy Virginia that has, a nice sourness that touches different parts of your tongue. Supernatural flavor, a pleasant room note for Virginia, all that kind of stuff. Burns to a nice fine powder. A little hard to keep lit, but again, you know, if you learn how to work it and we'll kind of baby it for the first part of the bowl, it'll reward you later. So, yeah, great tobacco.
Well, that's the Red Virginia Flake. Or the crumble cake Red Virginia, rather. What else you got, man? I'm looking for something for you know, two guys like us, two friends might be able to enjoy.
Oh yeah, yeah, two friends. Well, you know, I just happen to have something on my shelf here that that is actually from two other friends. It's two friends, Valle Crucis tobacco, and man, this is a tobacco that's been on the market for a while. And actually, my tin of this that I've been smoking through recently was from 2016. This has been in my cellar for a little bit, but.
Yeah, before you jump into the tobacco, you got to give the context for the two friends. Like, where, like, even that name, like, tells the story of how a tobacco like this comes about, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So, of course, we're talking about Craig Tarler and GL Peace. These were two, obviously, Greg Peace, a good friend of our show, longtime listener, and, you know, tobacconist extraordinaire. Everybody in the market knows, obviously, who Greg is, and he makes some of the best tobaccos out there. Craig Tarler was the owner of Cornell and Deal for many, many years, and is no longer with us. He passed away several years ago. But Craig and Greg were friends, and they wanted to collaborate on several blends. And so the Valle Crucis was one of those blends that they put their heads together on, and I think made a really high quality product out of. And so you can find some of those other blends out there. You know, they're still readily available. You know, these two friends' collaborations are not particularly hot right now, and I think they should be revisited by people, by pipe enthusiasts across the world. These are tobaccos that I think, you know, it would behoove the pipe smoker to, you know, take a look at these two friends' blends again. They're really good, and something that I think folks should really revisit. They're tasty, thoughtful, you know, well-produced tobaccos, and I think all of them are good.
All right, man, good stuff. Well, so let's dive in here.
Yeah, so Valle Crucis, we have, you know, again, not one of their super hot, you know, varieties of the two friends tobaccos, but a really good one, one of my favorites, and I think something that's really tasty. Bo, do you kind of want to describe the tin here?
Oh man, okay, so I feel bad about this, but like,
I don't think you should.
So I think if anybody sees this tin, the immediate thing that's probably going to come to mind, even for the most like tobacco enthusiast of us, it looks like asparagus. It looks like roast asparagus all lined up in a nice little row. And and honestly, it's making me hungry for asparagus. Somebody needs to sprinkle some sea salt on it. But but the reality is, you know, it's one of those double take type moments. It's a darker tin. It does have kind of the two friends and the typewriter type of font with you know popping through. But you know, underneath that, in the imagery that you do see, essentially what you're looking at, and you get this on second look. Now, for those of you who got this on first look, good for you. The rest of us saw asparagus, but the reality is what we're looking at is hanging tobacco that is essentially being either cured or dried, perhaps maybe cooked, but hanging down and early in that process, because they are still like that nice leafy green.
Yeah, and I think actually what they've done is probably put a green filter over the top of this particular photo.
You think so? Okay.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's what they've done here.
So do you think, all right, from that standpoint, do you think that this was actually originally like not like, so the actual image that we see here is probably later on than the image that, you know, what we actually get from this is implying?
What do you mean? I mean,
like, if we were there looking at what was being pictured, are we actually going to see more akin to what's hanging above your head right now? Like, are we actually going to see like the brown, crispy, dried, cooked?
I think we would. Yeah, I think we would. I think this is a, I do. I think they've taken a filter and put this over this. And so it just kind of has this funky, like you said, it looks like asparagus. It really does. Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, it kind of, which makes you think when you open the tin, is it going to have like a vegetal smell? Will it, You know, will it have a you know, the green almost evokes like a lime flavor? Will it be a lime, like a citrusy smell? Crucis, kind of in our ham-fisted English, you know, it's the crucis, citrus. Is that related? I don't know. And so you kind of, it leaves you guessing, right? You know, until you read more about the tobacco. This is a non-aromatic, but it is lightly topped. And so you know, some of our purists out there, fuddy-duddies, would not smoke this because it might have a little topping on it. But from the back of the tin, it says, inspired by the peace and tranquility of a small Carolinas mountain community, Via Crucis blends stove Virginias and Orientals with rich Latakia, toasted unsweetened Cavendish, and a pinch of Perique. Finished with the top note of ginger, the whole is reminiscent of a quiet stroll through a grove of Carolina Highlands fir trees. And I think that's a fun representation that gives you kind of the spirit of this particular, you know, tobacco. Via Crucis, as they mentioned, is a community in North Carolina. It's a Latin word for veil of the cross, which is kind of beautiful. Yeah, just, you know, something I'm sure that was is a really beautiful area. I've never been there before, but it's in that western part of the state. Nice tobacco. You open the tin, you're met, of course, with one of these kind of paper discs, again, that is covering the top of the tobacco. It says vintage blends, selected hand-blended tobaccos for the discriminating smoker. And as soon as you open the tin, and definitely once you pull out the little paper circle, the aroma of this tobacco, similar to the one we just reviewed, the Red Virginia Crumble Cake, it nails you. It hits you. It comes from across the room. Similarly, actually, there is a vinegary flavor or aroma to this, which is, you know, for me, very pleasing for folks, I think, that like some of a, you know, tangy flavor in your tobacco. I think it's kind of pleasing. So, again, this is a ribbon tobacco. It's got kind of a brindle calico cat color. You know, you'll have some darker, lighter, and all in between tobaccos. Just a nice, you know, ribbon that, you know, just a consistent ribbon, you know, something that's very typical of most pipe tobaccos. This is a kitchen sink tobacco, right? It's a tobacco that, you know, they kind of brought out all the different stops here. You know, you've got that kiss of Perique on the end, Latakia, Cavendish, Virginia's. You know, I detect a little burley in there. You know, I think it's just got a little bit of everything. You know, the Oriental tobaccos in there. And then this is what's fascinating, too. You don't see, they call it a top note of ginger. You know, that's something that's not very common out there. You don't see folks
don't
using a lot
like
of ginger.
Toasted, you know, like you don't think about like toasted or baked or any kind of like, when I think of ginger, I think of like cool and fresh, you know, like those type of sensations rather than something I would associate with pipe tobacco.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I will say, you know, when you open the tin of tobacco, there is almost and maybe it's the tanginess, maybe it's the ginger, you know, but if you're not looking at the tobacco, you almost get the note of almost like a fresh cut melon. I don't know. It's interesting. Mm. It's a different kind of a different experience. There's a sweetness there that I think is fascinating. So I have had, you know, ginger come through on other tobaccos before. Probably the most prominent for me personally was Haddo's Delight, kind of from Greg Peace, you know, who was, you know, also a collaborator on this tobacco. You did kind of have that, you know, gingery flavor there. Not sure if that's a you know, something he was going after or not, but you know, but I have kind of sensed that before, and yeah, it's just fascinating. The smell of it kind of reminds me of those, we call them honeydew tobaccos, the tobaccos that are, you know, Virginia forward tobaccos, but just with a touch of sweetness added to them to make them, give them kind of a fresh flavor. So so you really get that. And to be honest with you, I don't know if I'm, you know, in, kind of impressing this over the whole experience because I'm being colored by what the tin looks like, but the fresh smell of this tobacco, when you open it, kind of paired with the green on the outside and the asparagus looking leaves, you know, it's, I don't know. It really does make kind of a nice, Nice experience as far as just the whole process, opening the tin, smelling it, lighting it. The room note on this is very good. It has a nice kind of semi-sweet room note. When you do open this tobacco, the moisture content is basically perfect. It really is. It basically is just perfect. It's got just the right amount of moisture, and it's one of those things. I was able to load this in my pipe from the get-go, give it a nice little charring, false light, tamp it down, light it again, and keep it lit for quite some time. Just really, really nice. Cool on your tongue. It does have a little bit of what looks like bright leaf in there and some orientals that, if you hot box them, kind of tear you up a little bit. But if you puff this like you should smoke a pipe, man, I think you're just going to be really impressed with the coolness of the smoke. Interesting tobacco, it does kind of fill a niche there. Complex flavors, lovers of Latakia and Perique and Virginias, I think will all love this particular tobacco. I wouldn't necessarily call this an aromatic tobacco, although it does have a little bit of that added sweetness. And so, you can expect that. But a lot of our favorite blends out there that are regularly considered non-aromatics also have some of that just little kiss of topping. And for this one, I think the ginger on it is pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Like when you've got such talent like these two gentlemen behind this brand and this blend, man, you know you're going to get some innovation, and I think that's incredible.
Yeah, I really, really appreciated what they did here, and really all of the Two Friends blends are that way. We've talked on the air before about the English chocolate and great tobacco, all kinds of interesting notes there. I think these are all tobaccos that are worth perusing. Stick them in a Meerschaum, stick them in a corn cob, and one of those pipes that you'll be able to get some more subtlety of flavor out of, and really appreciate all the complexity that they put into these blends.
Well, the great thing is, man, with a blend like this one, and honestly, any blend that you hear on a Tobacco Talk or beyond, by sticking them in a Meerschaum, by sticking them in a corn cob pipe, or hey, how about a corn cob pipe from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum? You always get a really good quality smoke, and you're able to pick out a lot of these textures and these nuances in no other way that you can really get. We've often talked about corn cob pipes as being kind of a necessity to your collection for the discerning pipe smoker, because it does allow you to get every single aspect of these different flavors that are involved. And so, hey, this week the episode is brought to you by the Great Dane from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
That's right. The Great Dane is a great pipe, both to learn smoking a pipe on, but also, to have in your rotation. It's a generous sized bowl, so it makes a good companion for that, evening after work where you're sitting on the porch enjoying your favorite beverage and maybe smoking some Two Friends Via Crucis or some Sutliff Red Virginia, trying to taste the nuances of those flavors. And so just an excellent pipe for that.
That's right. So, hey, if you've got one, be sure to smoke it this week. Tweet out a photo of yourself doing so. It's a great way to let the good folks know at Missouri Meerschaum that you appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man. Pipe question of the week coming in from Barry Timmons. Barry's asking the question, how do you take care of a Meerschaum pipe? I've seen a couple that interest me, but I'm afraid to get one. Man, Meerschaum pipes can be intimidating. This is actually a really good question.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Don't number one rule, Barry, don't be afraid. Dive in, man. Meerschaum pipes, you know, some of the more ornate ones can be a little expensive. And then, of course, it's a material you may not be familiar with, and they look kind of fragile. So, you know, how do I do this, right? Is it something that I'm worth, you know, that I can get into and not have to worry about too much? And, man, yeah, meerschaums are great, you know, for anyone's pipe collection. And I think a real necessity as well, you know, if you want to taste different types of tobacco and also round out your collection, try different pipes with different experiences. But anyway, having said all that, to take care of a meerschaum pipe, you don't want to build cake in a meerschaum pipe. Meerschaums, you know, the beauty of a meerschaum is that they don't over time, well, they don't require cake because the meerschaum can take a lot of that heat, but also the meerschaum itself will not absorb those residual flavors. And so you just keep the inside of your meerschaum bowl very clean. I do that simply by just scrubbing the inside of the bowl out with a pipe cleaner after every smoke. And so scrub the stem, the shank out, and then turn my pipe cleaner into a little U, cram it down in there and just scrub that real, real good till it starts coming out clean. And, you know, the inside of the pipe will look dark, but if you can get as much of that char and cake out as you can, the better. You know, there are ways, some people when they smoke a meerschaum, they get hung up on the fact that they really need to keep it pristine. And so if you want to do that, you'll want to not touch your meerschaum with your bare hands. Some people will just grab it by the stem. Some people will go as far as to use gloves or like those white cotton gloves, you know. All my meerschaums look like crap.
Well loved.
Well, it's because I don't do that. You know, it's one of those things. If I've got my grubby paws and I'm sitting there, I've been blending tobacco all day, and you know, when I want to grab my meerschaum, I'm going to grab it. You know, and I don't really. I'm not searching for my white cotton, you know, gloves that I, you know, dust with or whatever. So, yeah, you know, it's one of those things like, you know, you don't have to maintain its pristine look like that. Either way, it's going to smoke great. But if you want to, they do really age well and can be beautiful. Just be sure if you want the look of it to maintain, to not grab it by the meerschaum. You're going to want to grab it by the stem or you know, use some kind of glove or something like that. So, but yeah, other than that, man, use it as you would any normal pipe. Clean it after every smoke. You know, it's very easy. They are fragile, but all that means is that you can't drop it. And so just don't drop it, you know, and you're fine. That is why they come with the little handy cases to that are custom fit to each pipe, and that'll keep them good and safe.
That's right. Well, hey, great question, Barry. And hey, if you've got a pipe question of the week, be sure to send it in. show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that's show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire
with the squire. Quick fire question, Jones. Ow! All right, man. Quick fire questions. We got some new questions in from Pastor Yoda. Oh, man. You know, there was this whole back and forth over Yoda versus Yoda.
It's Yoda.
I know, I was right. I just want to.
You were right.
I like taking the opportunity to point out I was right.
I'm on record as saying it again. You were right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know. I just any chance. Any, you know. So Pastor Joe is right that this edition is the eating and drinking edition. Which I mean, like that's our favorite. Let's be honest. That's our favorite. All right. Are you ready? These are gonna be tough. I'll just go ahead and tell you, man. These are gonna be tough.
Okay. All right. Go for it.
Chicken and waffles or shrimp and grits?
Ooh.
I know.
Man. Golly. That's mean. I'm going to go with shrimp and grits. Man, but that's hard. I mean, that really is like picking between your two favorite kids, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. It's hard to get chicken and waffles wrong. And I find that it's more challenging to get shrimp and grits right.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I feel like a lot of people think you can just slap some shrimp on some grits and call it a day, and that is not what shrimp and grits is.
Yeah, that's true. They've got to have a creaminess to them. They need to have
like that Creole gravy-esque like mixture. Get some sausage in there. Get the spice.
Just a little bit of sauce, maybe andouille or something, and then the right amount of spice. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people will mix in like Gouda cheese or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, those are, it's harder to get right. I think you're right. But doggone it, I love it.
It is. I mean, when done right, absolutely. But that's, so that's the thing though. Like let's say I'm at a new restaurant I've never been at before and I see chicken and waffle and I see shrimp and grits on the menu. So which one am I going for? Well, the shrimp and grits is kind of a, you don't know if you're getting something like quality or if you don't know if you're like, they just took some instant grits and they like steamed up some frozen shrimp and they put it in front of you on a plate and call it a day. Because you know, some people do that. Like some places do that and they should be, you know,
ashamed.
Yeah, they should be absolutely ashamed. They should be run out of town. Chicken and waffle, though. The great thing about chicken and waffle is it's really hard to get it wrong. Like, if you're going to put chicken and waffle on your menu, nobody has the audacity to do that and then come out with some grilled chicken. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or, like, some flimsy waffles. Like, everybody knows how to do a chicken and waffle right. Now, you can put it over the edge. Like, you get a good, like, spicy sweet glaze on that chicken. Come on, man. Like, that... that's phenomenal. So anyway, if I'm walking into a place and I don't know much about it, then I'm probably going to err on the side of chicken and waffle. And that being said, I've had bad chicken and waffle before. It is possible. It's just rare.
Right.
Whereas shrimp and grits, there's been many a time, like I'm the sadder but wiser consumer because I've gotten some of those terrible, you know, shrimp and shrimp on grits instead of shrimp and grits. So if done right, shrimp and grits. If I'm going in blind, chicken and waffle. That's how I'm going to answer that.
All right. That's fair. Yeah.
All right. Biscuit and gravy or pig in a blanket?
Biscuits and gravy. 9.5 times out of 10, biscuits and gravy.
Yeah. Back in the day, I was more of a biscuit and gravy fan than I am today. But if we're talking pig and blanket from like Sister Schubert.
I know, right? Those are good. They are good. Like, yeah, you can eat a bunch of them and not feel bad about it.
You know, I don't know Sister Schubert personally. I have a feeling that she's no longer with us. But you know that she's making some pig and blankets in heaven right now.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a sister saint right there, man. Pigs. Oh my goodness. So yeah, I'm gonna go with those Sister Schubert pigs and blanket.
Okay.
All right, and then finally, root beer or ginger beer?
Man, root beer. I like ginger beer on occasion, and I do like on occasion using ginger beer to like make a craft cocktail with or something like that. Yeah. But man, if I'm just drinking a soda or a refreshing drink, like, man, I'm a pull for root beer. I don't know. There's something about ginger beer by itself. It's hard for me to want regularly, but but on average, like I love root beer, man. A good Barks root beer or, you know, A&W or something like that. I love good root beer.
Interesting. When's the last time you had root beer?
It's probably been, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, something like that.
Okay. All right. So you do actually drink it regularly.
Yeah.
Do people actually drink ginger beer like straight up?
Yeah, they do. I don't think it's very super common. I think people do. Yeah.
What's the difference between ginger beer and ginger ale?
That I don't know. I do know they taste different. Yeah, I feel like ginger ale is sweeter, it's fizzier, and it's more of a soda. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I know there's a difference, and I know they taste it. Ginger beer is like very, like it's a, it, maybe one of our listeners could let us know the difference there. Ginger beer is much more pungent. It's very much.
Well, it's a cocktail seasoning. Like that's always the way that I've seen ginger beer, but like I'd never thought about pairing these two up. But then I realized the ginger beer and ginger ale in terms of, you know, if somebody was walking in and had never, no context of either, they might just assume they were the same thing, but they're clearly not. And I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah. They sure taste different. That's for sure.
Yeah. I had root beer this last past weekend, or no, 2 weekends ago, for the first time in a long time. And I was drinking, and I thought, you know, I think I may have aged out of ginger beer, ginger ale rather. Or no, not ginger ale, root beer. I think I may have aged out of root beer. Like it just did not, I didn't enjoy
didn't
it.
Didn't connect
like
with you, yeah.
Yeah, but so I'm going to go with ginger beer with the context of, you know, if we're talking like a Moscow Mule or a Dark and Stormy or a Kentucky Mule or something of that nature. I'm there for it.
Okay.
But great questions, Pastor Joda. Thank you so much for those. And hey, if you've got some quickfire questions, be sure to send them in. show@countrysquireradio.com is the place to do it. And of course, quickfire questions brought to us by the amazing shirts available to you at thecountrysquireonline.com. Represent the Country Squire Radio well by checking out the shirts at thecountrysquireonline.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
All right, man. Listener feedback coming in. First one up from Ron Seitz. Ron, a Pipe Club member. Also, I just think recently, I think 2 weeks ago we mentioned we had sent out all the invitations and welcome packages to our new members.
Yeah, that's right.
It's always great, man, because, you know, I'm on Facebook enough to actually like be involved in our group there. Like I go on Facebook to like check our club lounge and like, you know, post some things, comment some things. And so I'm definitely in there, but I'm not like on Facebook. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just not, it's not my jam.
Yeah.
But the thing is that over time, whenever I go in there and I'm like, you know, checking up on seeing what people are talking about, that sort of deal, I see the member request list like build and build and build and
growing
build.
And growing. Yeah. All these frustrating people that have been supporting us and finally were like, let the floodgates open.
The problem, but this is the problem, man. Most, a lot of times it's like, you know, maybe 30% of the request list is actually our members. And then the rest of them are either amazing listeners who are incredible, but are not necessarily club members. And so of course you do have to be a club member in order to be part of the lounge, which, you know, patreon.com/countrysquireradio will have all the information for you there. Or there's somebody that like, I think because, you know, none of us are just members of just one pipe group. You know what I mean? Like nobody is.
Right.
That person does not exist on the internet.
No, does not.
And so like, you know, you're in like, you know, the reformed pipe smokers and, you know, the pipe memes.
Gentlemen's pipe smoking gentlemen, society, yeah, pipe memes.
Exactly.
You've got, one for everything. There's left-handed pipe smokers. I mean, whatever you want.
Exactly. And so as the lounge kind of fills up more and more, then I think it gets recommended to other pipe smokers as well. Like, oh, Country Squire Radio Pipe Club Lounge. Let me join that. And it's like, well, you know, you don't just get in here. You got to have your name on the list. And unfortunately for our club members, the bouncer at the door is me, and I'm only checking that list maybe once a month. But the cool byproduct of this, this is kind of a long explanation, but the cool byproduct of this is that when people do come in, it's all at once. So you're part of like an incoming group, like a new freshman class, essentially.
Yeah, that's right.
And,
yeah.
And so that is kind of cool to see.
A cohort. Yeah. And everyone gets to know each other and is revealed at the same time and all that.
Exactly. So Ron's one of our incoming freshmen, for lack of a better term. But anyway, so what did Ron have to say?
I would like to mention, I really like pirate history and lore. I did not realize, though, until after listening to the Pirate and Pipe Tobacco episodes, that there was such a rich and deep history behind the famous pirates. Thank you for broadening the world of pirates for me to explore. I will also be getting the Sea of Thieves. I will also be getting Sea of Thieves this Friday as well. And I can't wait. And of course, that's from Ron. And he's going to play Sea of Thieves with all the other Squire Scallywag.
That's right, man. By the way, Squire Scallywag shirt available at thecountrysquireonline.com. Yes, absolutely, Ron. Welcome, brother. Yes. No, I hear you, man. It is no secret, no, in no form or fashion that I'm a huge a pirate nerd and
pirate fan.
Man, I've got an ever-growing book collection at the house. It's funny because in my mind, like I do slowly carve away at some of these pirate novels. Most of them are historic, and then there's some fiction in there. Like, for example, right now I've been going through Latitudes by Michael Crichton, which is a pirate novel that he wrote a couple of years back. And I've been very much enjoying that, but because I am such a slow reader, again, no surprise on this show, but I'm dyslexic, so it takes me longer to read things. But I've been acquiring kind of a little pirate library of sorts so that, you know, many years from now when my wife and I like fully retire, like I intend to have a nice stack of pirate books, and we're going to kick off like our retirement wherever we are, whatever we're doing. And I'll just be sitting somewhere enjoying my pipe and enjoying like this collection of pirate books that I've built up over the years. But yeah, man, Ron, I hope you've been enjoying the Pirates and Pipe Tobacco. I find this very affirming personally, because obviously that series, it's insanely self-indulgent, even more self-indulgent than Squire Select. And so I really do appreciate that that someone else out there is enjoying that. So rock on, Ron. Thanks so much, brother.
That's great.
All right, now we got another one. This one's in reference to the episode we did a while back about pipe smoking in Japan. And so this is kind of interesting. This is from Badlander Outsider. What did B.O. have to say?
Yeah, Badlander Outsider, he says B.O. Don't call him that.
Just, you know.
No, you try to make it abbreviated, but at the same time, we don't, you know, he's not that smelly.
What I meant. But okay, yeah.
He says, I might be mistaken, as it's been a while since I read up on this, but one of the reasons why Kissaroo pipes became ornate and involved and involved multiple materials was that it became a means of displaying one's wealth in public. I forgot the precise details, but essentially the merchant class in Japan during the period from roughly 1600 to the Meiji Restoration were prohibited from certain ways of showing off wealth. For example, they weren't allowed to carry swords. So rather than put money into ornate details on the scabbard or hilt of a sword, they would put the money into making their own kisaru extremely ornate and flashy to show off their wealth and prestige. And that's from Badlander Outsider. Cool. We didn't realize that. And of course, that's referencing an episode we did quite a while back on Japanese pipes. And cool thought there. Cool concept. It's good to know that. Makes sense. You think about all the very elaborate, ornate artwork that comes from Japan. Certainly over the past several hundred years, that would make good sense.
This is great feedback, and it's also a great, great opportunity just to remind everybody, like, we know what we know about what we know, and the rest we really love to, like, highlight you guys on. So anytime you want to add anything to a topic or correct us, call us out, that has happened many times, and we appreciate that and welcome it. But it's each episode we hope is the start of a conversation that continues on in pipe forums and pipe discussions and pipe clubs across the world. And, you know, so we'd love to incorporate that. So even on, like, you know, this one in particular, I love because it's an older episode, but I thought that this was really worth kind of bringing back up because it's, you know, the conversation keeps on going. And I thought this was right. Some good perspective here.
Yep.
Well, hey, man, great stuff. Of course, these episodes are always fun to do, and you can find the full archive of our original 100 episodes available exclusively to our patrons. If you go over to patreon.com/countrysquireradio, you can support the show for as little as a dollar an episode and get that full archive of podcasts available to you, extra content, great stuff. And then, of course, for those of you who want to become club members as well and join our lounge online, we'd love for you to do so. Again, patreon.com/countrysquireradio is the place to do it. You can also keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow me. I'm at TheRealBoYork on Twitter.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop at @_CountrySquire.
Of course, the show's handle is @SquireRadio, and all that and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. Well, John David, man, it's
all right, dude.
We did it. We did a tobacco talk like we're supposed to.
We did, man. I know, like we're supposed to do, right? Yeah, it was so good, man. I've still got a little tuft of this Two Friends Via Crucis. I'm about to go back up to the shop and enjoy it thoroughly while I relax the rest of this afternoon.
Man, that's the way to do it. All right, man. Well, hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.